Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Feliz Cinco de Mayo, everyone, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who is also the author of the forthcoming The Weed Agency. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We've got good, bad, and crazy martinis for you as usual. Jim, we start with the good, and obviously looking at polls 6 months ahead of Election Day could be a little bit optimistic, but anytime you see good news in there, you like to point it out, and that's the result, basically, of a new survey conducted by the folks at Pew and USA Today. People are not happy with Democrats is basically the conclusion here. 65% say their jobs in their community are difficult to find. Only 27% say they are plenty available. That has not budged at all in the past year. 55% disapprove of the Affordable Care Act. 41% approve. And the strong disapproval is very high there as well. And in the generic ballot, 47-43 in favor of Republicans. If that is even, Republicans are licking their chops. The fact that they've got a four-point generic lead right now is very, very good. Basically, what they're saying is they haven't seen numbers this good for the Republicans since the revolution of 1994. So, Jim, again, we're not on Election Day, but the tea leaves are starting to look pretty darn good here.
This is one of those polls where there really isn't a silver lining for Democrats. It's pretty bad up and down the board. Usually what they'll say is, oh, you know, Obama's not doing too well. And yeah, Democrat, but Republicans are worse. And actually, you're starting to see a bit more gravitation towards the Republicans. One of the things that really jumped out at me was how when they say 65% want different policies than Obama from the next president, while we still have like 2.5 years left in this presidency, you're still talking about two-thirds of the public has largely given up on this guy. This is really not all that different from April 2006 for George W. Bush. At that point, it was a 70-23 split. You know, this is not where Obama thought he was going to be. And my suspicion is, if these numbers are accurate, the public is starting to tune out Obama. And now when he goes, he's apparently got some big climate change event scheduled for this week. And in addition to all of his Democratic fundraisers he'll be going to in California this week, you know, he's not a tool for his party to get out the vote and to mobilize people unless it's like in a deep blue state or district. And that's obviously not where, you know, Democrats have their problems this cycle. So, yeah, this is obviously, you know, we're a little bit early. But if you're a Republican, this is what you want to see. Now, in the next couple of weeks, we may see the poll numbers bounce around a little bit. But it's at this point, it's really hard to envision a scenario in which Democrats go into Election Day feeling great. Maybe they can claw their way up a little bit. Maybe the economy picks up a little bit. Increasingly, Obamacare, the economy, a sense of chaos in the world, these things are increasingly getting baked into the cake. The cake is solidifying, creating the political environment. Yes, the quality of the candidate matters. Yes, the quality of the campaign matters. You never know who's going to have this terrible gaffe right before Election Day. I am sure there'll be an effort by the Democrats to try to pick somebody and turn them into the Todd Akin of this cycle. But so far, for an administration that does everything through the lens of politics, you think that they'd be doing better politically, wouldn't you?
Case in point, last week, trying to spin the Ben Rhodes email on Benghazi and doing such a poor job that even most of their brethren in the left-leaning mainstream media were calling them out for it. Speaking of Benghazi, if we had taped on Friday just a couple hours later, our good martini might well have been the decision of House Speaker John Boehner to finally create the select committee looking into Benghazi. And the even better news, although I guess it's not officially confirmed yet, Jim, I think we'll probably find out later today, it appears that Trey Gowdy of South Carolina, who is everybody's YouTube favorite when it comes to questioning from the Oversight Committee, looks like he's the choice to be the chairman of this committee, which can make this really, really good. All right, now on to the bad part of this. The Democrats are trying to make it seem as though it's the Republicans who are politicizing this. Here's David Plouffe, President Obama's campaign guru, talking about how he thinks Democrats ought to look at all this.
This has been politicized like we've never seen before. And I think what's happening, Richard Nixon talked about a silent majority back in 1968. There's a very loud, delusional minority that's driving our politics, that's in control of the Republican Party. There's no conspiracy here at all.
And so they're basically keeping the same talking points they had before last week, Jim. And the question is, if Democrats don't participate or deny its legitimacy, is that going to impact how much the media pays attention here?
First of all, I just want to add to your coverage of this, Greg. I have a statement issued by Tommy Vietor, the former spokesman for the National Security Council. It just says, dude, which I think really says it all, making fun of the Tommy Vietor deciding to call Brett Baer dude in his statement. So one of the things that jumps out about this, you saw the reference to the there is no conspiracy here. What does the left think that the right's accusation of conspiracy is?
They basically think that Republicans are delusional when it comes to all things Obama, and so anytime anything goes wrong, they're going to blame him for it.
We made pretty specific accusations about they rather lackadaisically or with using her terrible judgment turned down all of Stevens' requests for additional security and downplayed the threat and got caught basically being asleep at the wheel. That's not a conspiracy. That's just incompetence. Then there's the lack of mobilization of a rescue effort during that night. It sounds like there was a lot of confusion over this. The general who testified last week said they kept waiting for a request from the State Department to launch the rescue mission, and they didn't do it. They didn't get one. Over to you, Hillary. That's, again, more incompetence. That's not a conspiracy. That's not, you know, shadowy cigarette-smoking guy going after Mulder and Scully and Deep Throat meeting in the parking garage. Then the third one is the effort to offer the public a explanation for the events that just flat out wasn't true. And we've seen this go through with all the emails that got released. We saw the explanation for the events getting less and less accurate over time, not based on anything from the ground, not based on anybody who was witnessing what was going on there. Everybody who was on the ground saying we knew immediately this was an attack. No one was saying this was a demonstration that got out of hand or anything like that. When we say conspiracy, like the only thing that you could say is in that category is the committee asked for a bunch of documents. We're told that they were given everything. And then along comes Judicial Watch. They file their own lawsuit and they find stuff that didn't get turned over to the congressional committee. That's a cover up. But again, not a conspiracy. There is no Area 51 in this scenario. So there is this like knee jerk accusation thrown around here. When he says a delusional, you know, minority or plurality. Is it delusional to ask these kinds of questions? Because do you really feel like we have a really good sense of who at the State Department was held accountable for not sending the aid? We had the four people who were sent home with pay for a couple months and then rehired to the old jobs. We never really got a very good explanation to how close did we get to somebody ordering a rescue mission? And if not, why not? What was the delay there? What was the holdup? Why wouldn't somebody go to battle stations the moment we knew people were shooting at Americans down in Benghazi? And on this third one, you know, they say there's no cover-up, but we keep learning new information that should have been turned up over, which kind of is pretty much the definition of a cover-up. I think it goes back to the Clinton impeachment, that when you're really caught, the only defense left is to pound the table, claim that everything the other side is doing is partisan, and hope that by accusing the other guys of partisanship, you'll get enough of your guys to stay with you and wait it out. And the administration's response pretty clearly is to wait it out. At the end of the day, everybody says, look, four Americans died. We haven't caught anybody. We haven't killed anybody. The explanation that was sent out to the public in the weeks afterwards was flat out wrong. We jailed a filmmaker who really had nothing to do with this particular event. You know, this is a pretty disgraceful chapter in American history. If you talk about this, the administration will call you a conspiracy theorist. And so on the one hand, this is a festival of unaccountability. This is a demonstration of just how far they will go, because from beginning to end, their only purpose is to say, hey, stop blaming us. We're not responsible. There's nothing we can do about it. Rather depressing chapter of just how far they'll go and how much they're willing to keep a, you know, laughable joke like Carney up on stage, you know, lying to the White House press corps.
The crazy martini now, and that's the White House Correspondents' Dinner that takes place on the first Saturday evening in May most years. The president does a comedy routine. They hire a comedian to do a comedy routine. And most years, the president spends most of the time making fun of himself. Obama did a little bit of that this year, talking about healthcare.gov and the fact that one of his kids asked Bill Clinton to be the career day speaker because he was more popular. But most of the time he spent zinging other people and, as you would expect, folks on the right. Here's just a couple examples.
At one point, things got so bad, the 47% called Mitt Romney to apologize. Michelle and I watched the Olympics. We cannot believe what these folks do. Death-defying feats. Haven't seen somebody pull a 180 that fast since Rand Paul disinvited that Nevada rancher from this dinner. And speaking of conservative heroes, the Koch brothers bought a table here tonight, but as usual, they used a shadowy right-wing organization as a front. Hello, Fox News.
Oh, man, he's awesome, isn't he, Greg?
It wasn't horrible, but it just shows that even when he's supposed to be poking fun at himself, he can't resist going after other people instead.
Yeah, I mean, this a lot of this stuff is going to be in the eye of the beholder. But it does seem like that Obama's self-mocking, Sasha and Malia decided to bring Bill Clinton from Korea Day. That's actually kind of complimentary of Bill Clinton. Like even his ones that are supposed to be making fun of himself always seem to be not quite as severe as the digs he takes at other people. He did one about, he heard from a man in Virginia who is sad and depressed. He has a part-time job. He has no prospects and nobody listens to him. His colleagues don't respect him and he's got no, you know, and he says, Eric Cantor, you can call me anytime. A lot of people will say this is kind of in the eye of the beholder. I think it's just safe to say that Barack Obama is not a guy who laughs at himself easily. And he is somebody who definitely enjoys zinging his opponents and doing so at a time when it's, remember the time when he invited Paul Ryan to the speech at GW? And he denounced Ryan 6 ways to Sunday, tearing it apart with Ryan in the first row. And Ryan's not in a position where he can, you know, pull a Joe Wilson and stand up and say, you lie, you know, without looking like a nut job. He did the same thing with the Supreme Court. There's something about Obama that really enjoys sticking it to people he doesn't agree with in circumstances they can't respond the way they would like to. There are things you can mock about these guys. He did the umpteenth John Boehner is orange joke, which feels a little tired at this point. Again, you know, some might say this is a very tired tradition now. As I put it in the Morning Jolt, the White House correspondence has been going on, I believe, for, you know, decades and decades. We've had the backlash to it. Now we've had the backlash to the backlash, saying that there's too much hand-wringing and chin-stroking over this. You know, it's one night of a dinner. People are not going to change their coverage of the White House just because they get to have dinner with the president in the room once a year. I, for one, as a guy who briefly went to the cocktail hour this year, resent the idea that just meeting someone could turn you into an apostle for their viewpoints. And just on a completely unrelated note, Greg, I'd like to point out, Tim Tebow really got a raw deal from the New York Jets. He's just a fantastic guy, fantastic role model for everyone. I can't believe an NFL team hasn't signed him. And has absolutely nothing with the fact that I got a chance to meet him briefly Saturday night. I am incorruptible, Greg, but he's awesome. I feel like there was a little less hype and complaining about the White House Correspondents' Dinner this year, at least in the days leading up to it, because it feels like we've had that conversation. The tradition isn't going away. The only thing that I think would be nice is that, considering how we did one a couple of years ago, the right before the Bin Laden raid, I would like this to kind of mark the terrorist raid eve in a way. That every year that, you know, we invite a correspondent, we're kind of guessing, who's Obama going after? Is it Zawahiri this year? Is it some other foreign leader foreign terrorist? You know, we should just kind of mark that as this, you know, like, you know, everybody has a big party, and then the next day we have something even more to celebrate because some terrible person has been wiped off the face of the earth. I also say firsthand, you can definitely see the pre-Salahi era and the post-Salahi era. There used to be a lot more laid back about people getting in, and now you need, you know, to get wanded, and you can't get into the cocktail party without invitation, and this, that, and the other thing. So, you know, thanks a lot, Salahis. You're right on there on a crap list, along with Harry Reid.
Way to go, Salahis. Way to go.
Way to go, yeah.
On that note, Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.